Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello, you're listening to the OMG MotoGP podcast with former Grand Prix rider and British champion Keith Ewan, myself, Amy Reynolds, and I'm delighted to say that today we are joined by former World Beat commentator and current Rookies Cup commentator, Matt Dunn, to talk all things Texas. That was an absolute barnstormer of a MotoGP race. It really got all the feels going. Just before we delve into that, can I just say, if you want to find out more about our YouTube and Patreon memberships, visit the links below. Your support means we can keep this show on the road, and we absolutely want to, because Maverick Viñales became the first MotoGP rider to win with 3 different manufacturers. Over and above that, there was so much action in that MotoGP race. I mean, if there was ever an advert for MotoGP, that one certainly did the job, didn't it, Keith?
Yeah, and COTA's normally so boring, isn't it? We've said, complained about it before in the past, that COTA's never had some great races, but it all kicked off. I mean, if you're watching it on Friday and Saturday as well, qualifying was bad enough. Jorge Martin, it looked like he was on some kind of steroid. He crashed twice in one session. It was spectacular how desperate everyone was to get themselves on the front couple of rows of the grid. And then, of course, right at the very start, Christian Gabarini running through with a fender in his hand to change the front fender on Pecco Bagnaia's bike. I mean, there was all sorts of things going on in the background as well. It had a real tension about it. But I always think the Americans, they do it so well, don't they? Big American flag flying at the top of that massive Great Hill, fly-by jets, national anthem. The whole thing is always done really, really well. And a little more in the way of attendance, I think, as well at COTA this time around. I think that the fact that Trackhouse were playing, you know, we got the 2 new Trackhouse MotoGP bikes out there, resplendent in the Stars and Stripes. That makes a difference as well. Joe Roberts obviously has been going pretty good, so he might have put a few on the gate. So all in all, fantastic atmosphere to start the race, and then what a cracker. Hasn't been one better than that for a while.
You're absolutely spot on. And Matt, I mean, all three of us are in the same boat. We're normally on-site present to feel all of that energy and enthusiasm and everything. And like Keith just said, it was really cool to see such a great turnout there.
Yeah. It's a shame they don't actually publish the official attendance figures. I did note that yesterday. Obviously, in previous occasions, there's a bit of a reason for that when you got about 400K through the gates for F1, maybe 40 for MotoGP doesn't look so good. But I would have said yesterday for race day, it looked much more packed than perhaps I've ever seen it. And that was absolutely awesome.
I've got to say, you're on site all the time, Matt. I mean, I've got to ask you this. There's quite a lot of developments going on behind the scenes as well that you're obviously well in touch with. And I wonder what the feeling is across the paddock now it's all settled down with Liberty. But more than that for me is the Yamaha situation. I mean, it looks like, yeah, the announcement that obviously Quartararo has re-signed, so big bucks we're talking. Yamaha investing, obviously. And then the announcement that Lynn Jarvis, managing director of racing, is rolling over as well. That for me is massively significant, that Yamaha are really, really chucking everything at this for a result.
Yeah, I think like for Lynn's case, I did see that that is obviously just such a huge change. I mean, there was lots of people linking Fabio's words on his re-signing about them being some confidential moves happening or something like that in Yamaha, which is why he was convinced to stay on. And not sure whether that would be linked to that. He did then later say, I did see in his debrief, I think Friday or Saturday, that he expects Lynn to be around quite a lot still, but just mainly sort of stepping away. But how that actually manifests, who knows? But I mean, we didn't get a bigger advert for drastic change needed at the Japanese level of MotoGP than this weekend, really, did we? It was extremely unfortunate for both Yamaha and Honda, which I think is probably quite a charitable way of saying it.
I think you'd be very, very, I mean, yeah. Most Hondas ended up on the floor, didn't they? Yeah.
Well, did you read the Yamaha press release?
No, what did it say?
We'll talk about trying to put a positive spin on things. They were kind of touting Fabio's bit more of comeback. And okay, arguably he did have a comeback in that race, but it's not the kind of headlines you want to be reading, isn't it, when you're Yamaha or Honda?
No, certainly not. I think that's, it's pretty grim reading across the board, isn't it? Especially when you consider, of course, Alex Rins managed to get wins in Coda previously, both on Suzuki and then last year on Honda. And like, yeah, and he just couldn't make it happen. I think he said that he took a big setup change, a bit of a gamble yesterday, and it just didn't work out. But that's the stage they're at. They're basically gambling going into races because they're just treading water at the moment, aren't they? They're not doing front crawl or anything. It seems reading between the lines, right?
Talking of gambling, Amy.
Yeah, go on.
How much did you have on Rin?
I didn't put him in my actual kind of sprint race or MotoGP race bet, but I think, like Matt said, he hit the nail on the head with that one. The fact that someone that we both said was like a COTA specialist, and then you've got the guy that won the race, I bet he's really happy now that his time with Yamaha came to an end. It kind of, his fortunes have all come together, really, for Maverick Vinales.
Let's have a quick chat, shall we, about some of the moves that might be made. I mean, these signings have gone through, and I noticed there was more talk of Aleix Espargaró maybe ending up with his brother in a test rider role come 2025. And Albert Valera manages both Aleix and Jorge Martin, and we're wondering about Jorge Martin a little bit at the moment. And obviously, that's kind of a Aprilia connection, and with Aprilia going quite as well as it is. I mean, Bat Mav, as he's now badly known.
Where did that come from, honestly? I mean, it's great and it's working for him and it's cool, but where did he pluck that from? I guess, you know, it's something, you know, it's like, I mean, at least people watching it are going to be like, oh, I like the Batman rider, you don't have to know where it's come from.
He's pretty much bolted on now, isn't he, Aprilio? I mean, now that the back-to-back, a double at the weekend, we'll get to that in a minute, but the other space, you've got to say, must be fairly well and increasingly sought after, you would imagine, with the way things are going. And the likes of Jorge Martin, bearing in mind that, like I said, Albert Valera's his manager, might well be looking at that space and maybe moving Aleix across to testing and Jorge Martin. Any traction in the paddock on that one, Matt?
Well, my own gut feeling is that unfortunately, Albert Valera's in a bit of a conflict of interest there, isn't he, with two of his prime riders. Wanted to potentially say into one, like, it's going to be better for you long-term to move aside, mate, and I'm going to move the other one in. Because honestly, if Jorge Martin, he's dead cert that he's going to leave Pramac. He's absolutely dead cert. He's going to leave it. He's either going to be on a factory Ducati or he's not. And he's not going to go anywhere else, is he? Where else can he go? If he wants that factory seat, I was chatting with my other half yesterday watching it. I just thought, you know, you look at, okay, the Aprilia is incredible in the hands of Maverick in that race, but Martin, he is in the same way as Pecco is. He's absolutely at one with that Ducati. How much better can it get, you know, for him in that respect? His run of podiums only just come to an end now.
Although the 2024 Ducatis seem to have just a little bit of lacking a bit of finesse at the weekend. I mean, it looked like they were suffering from chatter and the light. Didn't matter whether they were on medium tyre, soft tyre in the back. They definitely had a bit of chatter problems. Pecco, I think, was complaining of it. and some of the others on the 2024 bike were as well.
Yeah, it didn't look great for them, didn't it? They weren't exactly that far away. It wasn't as if it was a horror show like the Japanese manufacturers had by any stretch, was it? But they certainly weren't as strong as you like to think. Did we ever get to the bottom of why Gabarini was sprinting towards the grid and everything? Bizarre.
You've got a fender in his hand and he was running down the grid for the sprint race. It was literally a sprint race for Gabarini, which is pretty unusual. I mean, and was there any connection between what he was doing and what they were bolting on the bike when the thing leapt in the air at the start of the sprint race? I mean, that was definitely a malfunction. I mean, nowadays you pretty much just dump the clutch and away you go. But Bang Iyer's bike just leapt in the air and he lost all that time at the start, which is critical in a sprint race, 10-lap sprint race. So I haven't heard whether there was any connection between what had gone on there or whether it was just a slight malfunction in some way, shape or form with the front of the Ducati.
There's just so many factors at play, isn't it? That's in that kind of thing. And obviously Bang Iyer was very choice in his words about what happened on Saturday overall in the sprint, with him being 1 second off, you know, stating very clearly that the only thing he'll change for Sunday is have his different set of tyres on. Didn't meaning the compound, he just said the different ones, and that was seems like a very diplomatic saying of him claiming that you would know better than I do, claiming that he perhaps didn't get a right tire, but then the other Ducatis were complaining of similar things too. So, you know, how much truth is that in there? Like, it's a lot of smoke and mirrors for the factory Ducati after that one, I think. What do you say, Amy?
Well, Jorge Martin didn't exactly help Pecco out at the start either, did he?
No. Bit of rough and tumble.
It was a bit of rough and tumble, but I do feel we need to have a bit more of a chat of the man of the moment, because in that first little skirmish he actually got punted back outside of the top 10. Maverick Viñales, as all of us know, he's a real confidence rider. When he's on top, when he's happy, when he's settled, you can really, really see it in the results. And when he has a little bit of a downturn, again, it kind of rolls on for him. But he was just on the ultimate high that weekend, starting off with the sprint race. He was almost, I don't want to say untouchable, but he was just, he had that little extra something, didn't he, Keith?
He did. And I think that you've just already said it. Confidence is one of those situations. I remember, do you know what, going back to Argentina, when BT Sport, the fledgling as it was then, now the almighty TNT, go everywhere, get everything broadcaster. The fact of the matter was, back then, I remember we were struggling a little bit to get the top guys to talk to us. And Hodgie did at turn one at Argentina, he did an interview with Maverick Viñales back in 2014 or whenever it was. And he was just a youngster that was looking alive and sparkling. And he reminds me this year of those years ago. He looks younger. He certainly looks leaner. His confidence is high. He really gets up. That Aprilia looks beautiful. You know, he was doing stuff with that bike that no one else was managing on the others. And I think that for a man like Maverick, as you've said, Amy, that confidence, once he's back to that level, there's going to be no stopping him. I mean, when was the last time you saw him fight the way he did?
Try never. Even back when he was consistently winning, like he rarely fought. The only time you really remember him fighting was with Marquez at Phillip Island, and he stacked it coming down into the Melbourne loop, didn't he? And getting his elbows like that, I mean, never seen that before. I've got to hold my hands up and make a public apology. It's a group chat with a bunch of old colleagues of mine from Dorna, and there's an account on Instagram called Bad MotoGP Memes. And they posted quite a brutal one after yesterday's sprint thing of it was like a caricature of Batman thinking, and it was like Maverick wondering how he's going to bottle tomorrow's Grand Prix. And when Maverick went back to 11th, I sent that to a bunch of mates, being like, this like, because I just said yesterday, it's like, ho ha ha, how funny. I sent that to them, being like, he's done it. Unfortunately, it's not going to happen. So I got to hold my hands up. That was just an unbelievable comeback, right? Because when has he ever shown to us in the past that he had it in him to come back from there? Never, right?
He's always been a quality rider, but you're right. He's a bit Jorge Lorenzo-ish. When Jorge Lorenzo gets himself out front, there's no way that you can sort him out. But certainly I was trying to think of a polite way of putting it there for a moment. And it's one of those situations where Maverick is exactly the same. Once he gets that smooth line and he gets away, he's very, very difficult to get on that kind of pace with. But I think Amy summed it up in a word, confidence. I think confidence at the moment on that Aprilia is just superb. Conversely, what happened to Aleix? I mean, Aleix, you know, couldn't make it work for him during on the basically the same motorbike, but just couldn't find the setup to make it work for him.
This might be a huge generalization and maybe not well researched, but like just from like a quick, where has Aleix been so far this season? He's not been as much as the front than, or obviously as much at the front as he has been in the last two seasons with Aprilia.
Yeah,
what
exactly.
What you tend to find in a team is that there's always one that is on the rise and the other teammate is finding it difficult to, you know, confidence and the way that goes within a team dynamic is quite difficult to get around. Right now, Mav has got the momentum behind him. And maybe Aleix, and maybe it comes back to what I said earlier on, you know, Aleix will know that perhaps this is the time. This is his last year. Maybe that is already rattling around in his head that by the end of the year, he's going to be a test rider and someone's going to be sitting on his motorbike for next year in the factory team. And that has a devastating effect. Doesn't matter how hard you're trying or how hard you're trying to put that to the back of your mind as a rider, it's there and it affects your performance. You know, everything... At this level, it's all above the eyebrows, you know. At this particular, with everybody within a few thousandths of a second around there, whatever motorbike you're on, it's above the eyebrows that makes it work.
This is what I love about when you have folks who say, like, I don't like the off-track drama, I hate the drive-to-survive-ification of the sport because they don't like the off-track storylines. Just let them get on and ride. And I always turn around to those people and go, but what happens off the track does directly impact what happens on it. And I really do think you're absolutely right when you say Aleix is thinking about those things at the moment. It's rattling through his mind. You know, he was already unhappy about having a bit of a seeming pay cut at his last contract renewal. He was like, I wanted more respect from Aprilia. And it's like, they're like, well, you know, we almost had Fabio Quartararo knocking at the door and things. And there's rumours that obviously Fabio turned down about 4 million or something like that that was quoted from Aprilia. And Aleix came into this weekend saying, well, Aprilia told me that they never contacted Fabio and stuff, and not telling me that although they are 100% or 99.9% focused while they are on the track, and you have to be, you're not telling me that those things don't pop up in their minds when they're feeling that a gap's increasing and they're going, shit, yeah, I need to crack on because of X, Y, Z, right?
He's the oldest bloke on the grid. He'll have seen it, been there, done it. He knows what goes on behind the bike sheds when it comes to these deals. They're going on all the time. It never, ever stops. So, I mean, Aleix knows exactly what the crack is. And that will be wearing him down slightly, I suppose. It was interesting to hear Massimo Rivola talking about needing a title sponsor. I mean, I have never seen a factory team chuck it out there on a live broadcast. Again, TNT, well done, TNT, for getting Rivola on and getting him to say this kind of stuff. But I mean, throwing it out there like that, we need a headline sponsor, which is one of the reasons probably why they weren't able to do a deal with Quartararo. If you've got 12 million euro on the table on one side of the fence and a full commitment from Yamaha to make that bike work for him, by the time we get to particularly the 2027 rules, I know it's a long way down the road still, and you've perhaps only got 4 million euros to play with, doesn't work. A third of the price, I'm afraid. Stock value is very important, and I can see why Quartararo stayed with Yamaha, certainly fiscally.
Well, someone whose their stock is very much on the up is, of course, Pedro Acosta. He was, once again, absolutely phenomenal and so entertaining to watch. It has been such a long time since I can remember watching someone and just the way they ride and their commitment and their DF attitude to everything just makes me so excited to watch it. And he's just got that, like we've spoken last week about his style and just the way he kind of is, he attacks the corners. He is sensational to watch, and back-to-back podiums in your third race, it's, I mean, we can't really sing his praises any more than we already have. Or Paul Dravathan, his crew chief, just makes me laugh. He's obviously so delighted to be working with him.
I think this is one for Matt, isn't it, really? I mean, Matt's he's touched on the drive to survive thing. And this kid is heaven sent. 19 years old, fantastic sense of humour, massively fast, sticking out the likes of Marc Márquez and all the other guys that are around him at any given time. Surely, you know, he is, Liberty have really landed, you know, the stars are aligning for Liberty at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. It couldn't be a better time, could it? You know, it's got sort of, yeah, and I'm not even going to do him the disservice of saying it's got vibes of Valentino when he came around in 2000. Not that I was even that conscious then of watching it because I was quite young, but you know, you read back through the history books. Or the same thing when Mark came around in 2013. I don't think it would be fair to say, oh, it feels a little bit like that. No, Pedro is something completely different. And I think one of the biggest things is I'm obviously very well connected being in Rookies Cup with the people who do genuinely know him best. And saw the rise of him through, you know, from basically not having much money and it was all on the line in Rookies Cup in 2020 to make a go of it and to show what he can do. And even those people that he still was super well connected with all the way through to last year in his second year in Moto2, his third in World Championship, they're still amazed by what he's doing. Yet they shouldn't be because they know exactly what he's capable of, if that makes sense. And that's, I think, really telling of how impressive he's been.
I think sometimes though, Matt, kids run out of momentum. You know, you get to a certain stage in life, Moto3, Moto2, you know, but MotoGP, he's made for it. It's working out for him straight away. I mean, Moto2 he struggled a bit more with than he is with MotoGP. It's a tough class. This is, you know, when I talk about what's north of the eyebrows nowadays, you know, speaking to Cal Crutchlow the other week, which will be out here on OMG MotoGP at some stage soon, you know, he's only 38 years old and he's confused about all the buttons and knobs and bits and pieces you've got to press and work out and the order of everything. So a gaming youngster of 19 years old, he's used to all this stuff. This is all second nature. And they're putting it together. He's putting it together. I can't imagine where he's going to go next. I mean, he's in for a win. There's no doubt about that. But I mean, it's the way he goes about his business. You know, tyres, you know, COTA is a place that uses up tyres. You know, it really does. And it's something that he's learning, you know, lap on lap, how to manage tyre wear so that he's actually got something left at the end of a race. And he seems to have already come across that, seems to have already worked that out.
Yeah, it seemed like he actually worked that out after Qatar. Because it was, you know, I was obviously the unseen videos that MotoGP do are fantastic, the behind the scenes stuff. And you can see when he first came in, he sat down in the chair next to Paul Trevathan. And Paul went, so how was the tyre management? And they all laughed, you know, just like a proper like, because clearly there was none. In Portugal, he already sorted out. And here, even better. The only reason why he got beaten by Maverick was because Maverick was on another level. It was not because he had cooked his tyres, I don't think, you know. And I mean, how incredible is that? Like, he's already sorted it. How long does it take others to figure that out? Even some of the best, right?
Reminds me of that Days of Thunder. I mean, anybody watched that Tom Cruise movie in the past? Days of Thunder, where he's taught how to drive a NASCAR. There is a very tiny, tenuous link, of course, and we'll go into it in a minute, but where he's learned to drive a NASCAR around the racetrack at the way the crew chief tells him, and of course he wins races. Anybody that's not seen Days of Thunder, not a great film, but you might want to watch it. But it links me to Trackhouse, of course, because they had a NASCAR race going on down the road at Texas and also had their two bikes for the first time in MotoGP at COTA, at the Circuit of the Americas, which was a big deal. And, blowing smoke in my own ear, Rael Fernandez. Hey, he was my... You remember, he was my bold prediction this year, Amy.
Ooh.
For this weekend?
No, it was my bold prediction for this year. We all had to do bold predictions earlier on in the year on OMG MotoGP, basically.
Of course,
What was going to be our kind of bold prediction? And I said, Rael Fernandez on the podium. Okay, he hasn't made it there yet. But blimey, I'll tell you what, that team, that youngster, looking good.
Well, he wasn't plucked, was he, to be placed in MotoGP, and albeit a little bit kind of reluctant from his side initially for no reason. He's definitely a talent for sure. I think he's obviously gone past that phase of being like, okay, I got moved up a little bit quicker than I would like to have done. I'm finding my feet. I think you're right, Keith. I don't think it's going to be long before we see him there a lot more regularly at the top.
Good for Trackhouse, though. At the end of the day, to, you know, home Grand Prix is important, particularly from a sponsorship point of view. And I mean, yeah, Marx has put a lot of money into this team and he's put a lot of commitment into it. And to see it, you know, we mentioned it last time, Nicky Hayden Hill, the big stars and stripes over the, I mean, it raises the game. They we need Americans. We need America in the game. And I think with Liberty now underwriting it, you know, you've got Dan Rossomondo, who's part of the commercial operator at Dorner as well, who's obviously an American that's familiar with the marketplace. There's a lot going to happen in I think in a short period of time. I really do. I mean, I know the Dorner guys are still managing the thick bit of the work, but I can see so many changes coming at such a huge rate of knots to our sport, and I can't see the negatives in it. And I'd be interested, Matt, to, again, you're on the ground every single minute of every single day, you know, how that feels in the paddock, how that translates.
I've definitely sensed from talking to a lot of people, because especially in Portugal, like going around talking with people anyways before any of the move was announced or anything like that, it was a sense of bit like, what are we going to do? Something needs to change. Things need to change here and things like that. I know, Amy, you and I have talked about that after many, many post-race beers over many years and things like that. So I can only imagine it's a bit of excitement. I would link back to one thing about Raul Fernandez just quickly on the subject of trackouts. Is like, that couldn't have been a better time performance for Raul, considering what happened in Moto2 with Joe Roberts. I mean, make no mistake, at their team launch, Joe Roberts was there with John Hopkins. And made some very good connections there, and it's quite clear in Joe's eyes that basically, if you want that MotoGP ride, it's there. You just have to go and get the results, and he massively got it, not just in round two in Portugal, but here in the US. So for Raul, I mean, him and Miguel need to watch their back a little bit, I would say, because I would make no mistake, if I was the organisers or Trackhouse Justin Marks, thank you very much, Miguel and Raul, you've been fantastic, but one of you's got to make way, because this is a commercial operation. You know, thanks very much, but off you go. We potentially, if your results aren't up to it, you know.
Matt, do you think that Joe has got it in him this year to perhaps be there a little bit more consistently? Because that's the only thing I say sometimes about Joe's seasons, is that he shows it on occasion and he might have a good run.
Yeah.
And then he tails off and he dips a little bit. It's Joe's definitely got the capabilities. His consistency has sometimes been the issue.
Yeah, I think so. I've obviously, for the audience listening, I've known Joe for quite a long time. Like on the inside, I've done a couple of small documentary series type things with him in 2020 and 2021. And obviously it was with American Racing last year, the actual team itself. And one thing that really occurred to me yesterday with that ride from him is, if there was ever a place where the wheels are going to fall off, considering he did really well in pre-season testing, a respectable result in Qatar, podium in Portugal where he previously won at, if the wheels are going to fall off and that consistency was going to start to crack, it would have happened yesterday. That's what really impressed me about what he did, was there was no more, he will never have any more pressure than he had yesterday. And he basically bossed it, apart from obviously getting the P1.
He was growing through that one little mistake and he would have been right. You know, another couple of laps and he'd been right there. Joe Roberts was on for a win yesterday. There's no doubt in my mind about that. He made one little mistake, which took him a bit too far away from the lead. Only 2 points off the championship now. Everything will be aligning for him, perhaps. And sometimes you need the kind of experiences you've been talking about, Matt. I mean, sometimes you need those dips in the middle of the year to know where you've got to work on yourself personally, how you've got to work out. You know, sometimes you have a dip in the year. Sometimes people have a dip in the middle of the race where they just suddenly concentration just wavers very slightly. Certain circumstances from a rider perspective can just take you away from the edge you need to be on consistently now. I mean, Moto3, Moto2, MotoGP, everybody is on the edge. There is no quarter given at all. We used to talk about quarters being given. They never really were. It was just much more of an amateur sport back in the day when people's fitness was much more varied than it is now. People's concentration, people's, you know, the very run-up, the very basic stuff that now is not even thought about because it's all being handled in the way that it should be. Psychology of things. I mean, we've got more sports psychologists in the paddock nowadays than we've got management. So it is a completely different game. And Joe really just needed to work on that area. Maybe he's got it covered. Maybe he has.
Yeah, and sorry, Amy, go ahead.
No, go for it, Matt.
I was just going to say, I know in the American Racing team, they have got a human performance coach there as well, Jen Duffy. We worked with her last year. She's extremely capable. And so that may well be part.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Of it, I don't know how closely she actually works with Joe himself, but also John Hopkins and his relationship with Joe is that of almost like a psychologist as well. They are so well connected. John's got a really good bond with two riders he's previously worked with, Joe and obviously Rory Skinner as well, and you can literally see the impact that the connection that they all have together is really does help. So I'm not quite, I'd love to find out and speak to Joe and the team and his family and see what actually a difference is, you know, because it's been a long road. How many years? It's been like 6 or 7 years in Moto2, and for it to start clicking together now, where it is a now or never kind of case, because he's getting to that age where if you're going to make it to MotoGP, you have to do it right now. Like every single day you wake up and it's on the table for you. Something's clearly changed, that a key piece of the puzzle has been put in place, which is allowing him to do that. And that's just extraordinary, really, from what he did yesterday. So good luck to him for the rest of the year, basically.
One of the big questions coming into this weekend that was perhaps on everyone's minds was whether Marc Márquez was able to regain his King of COTA title. He came close, ever so close, but unfortunately threw it away. Keith, what did you make of that?
I think Marc Márquez is there or thereabouts. I think they haven't quite found the setup yet. It's quite interesting, some of the interviews that he did during the course of the weekend. I think him and Frankie Carcetti have both got the serious face on at the minute, trying to work it out between them. He's crew chief, Frankie Carcetti, of course. They're just not quite there with that motorbike. You can just see it was dead skittery through qualifying. He was having to work really hard on it. And do you know what? I haven't had time this morning to look back at the tape, but I'm sure where he dumped it at turn 11, you're coming into that. It's all action. It's all on the move down into turn 11. It's a bottom gear. You've got something like five bottom gear hairpins at COTA. It's a proper Formula One type track when you come to dead stops. And I could swear that he locked that front brake up just before he made the mistake. Took him half a yard further down the track than he needed to be when he was actually properly on the anchors. And it went, you know, he was having to squeeze it harder than he wanted to squeeze it, and he ended up with a faceplant situation. He hadn't even really turned it in. But the bike looked lively all over the place. He was making it work for him. He looked good in the sprint race. You know, he was on for a win, I think, in the main race. We won't know because we don't know longevity tire-wise whether he's got, you know, all of that sorted out as far as the setup was concerned. But I just think they're just a little way off of the perfect setup at the moment on that bike for Mark. But they'll get around it. I believe that for sure.
I did see... Go on, Amy, sorry. I was going to say, Frank Carcelli, did you see his tweet this morning saying there, and it was sort of acknowledging what Mark had said yesterday, there was like a slight problem with the front brake, something to do with the pressure. It wasn't... But I couldn't really understand his sort of smoke and mirrored words about it. But I don't suppose you'd have an idea of what that could be. It was like a brake issue they talked about, Keith.
Well, I think that brake pressure is obviously you couldn't get much more brake pressure going through it when you're coming down to turn 11. You've got to get the thing stopped. But I think the balance is a major problem. Let me take you back to some of the comments that teammates have made when they've looked at the data of Mark's data, and some of the data that comes through for his braking is phenomenal. Nobody can brake, you know. Mark's got it locked most of the time. On, you know, he's always locking the front end up. It shows up on all of the data. And when the, you know, his teammates have looked through that data, and, well, yeah, if we did it like that, we'd just be on the floor. And I think he's asking more from that 2023 bike than anybody else ever has done before at the front end. And They've not quite got that right for him just yet, but they will.
Can I ask you guys a question? Obviously, it was a real anticipated move for Mark to jump on arguably the best bike on the grid. And a guy of his talent, I guess everybody was expecting him to jump on it and start winning races straight away. Was that an unrealistic expectation? And would Mark of, you know, 5 years ago have been able to make the switch and just make it work right from the off?
It's a good question. It's a very good question in that, you know, the question mark was still whether he was as fit and whether he physically could still maneuver himself in the way that he needed to do to take the shapes on a motorbike like he did. B, whether age-wise he was moving into an era where you transition from being massively raw talent to massive skill. You know, bravery, you know, meanders a little bit sometimes when you get towards your 30s. You know, things do change. There's no doubt about that in normal life, let alone just in racing life. And of course, at the end of the day, he is on a 2023 bike. And I think the difference there, okay, is not so much the bike. Yes, it isn't. You know, the 2024 bike is apparently much better. Whether he'd be able to get more out of it will only depend on, at the end of the day, the data and the backup that he has from the team. You know, where he's at a disadvantage, if anything, Grassini does not have all of the factory techs and all of the factory mechanics that, you know, the main teams will have on that bike last year on the 24 bikes this year. So I think where he's at a disadvantage is Frankie Carcetti, you know, did a brilliant job getting Digi back into the fold. In fact, he saved Digi's career effectively by doing what he did. But, you know, there was quite a long conversation, I think, that again, I can't remember who was having it. I think Natalie Quirk, again, TNT. Good job, TNT. Thank heavens for TNT. Was the fact that he said he was still working on his relationship with Frankie. You know, and it is a relationship. Is that those little quirks in how you speak, your little nuances in the way that you explain something. You know, he had 13 years with his previous, you know, crew chief. Now, you know, Santi Hernandez and he were joined at the hip. And now he's swapped into a brand spanking new team on a year old bike, which has advantages in that he will have data from before, but no one has data or sets the boundaries like Marc Márquez on a motorbike. They you know, trying to work out how Marc Márquez does things compared with every other normal human being is completely different. So they're working their way through it.
Yeah.
Matt. In the end, Nenea Bastianini managed to edge out Jorge Martin of a final spot on the podium. You've got to think that one would have stung a little bit on Jorge Martin's behalf. He was, you guys might have a different opinion, but Jorge Martin looked a little bit scrappy this weekend to me with the two crashes in qualifying. He looked a little bit all like skittish, I think is the word I'm trying to find.
Yeah, I think it comes back to what Keith was saying earlier about it with the leash and the off-track things going on in Jorge Martin's head as well, which is why actually, ironically, without the goings-on of Maverick's comeback story, Pedro Costa being amazing, Mark crashing and things like that, actually one of the juiciest storylines yesterday was Bastianini versus Martin, because there is still a second factory seat in Ducati up for grabs. And so for Martin to lose out on that would have really, really stung. I think it was really, really good for Bastianini, because I think a lot of people have sort of written him off a little bit after last year and things like that. He's not quite gelled with it. And that was a good comeback ride for him. But yeah, for Martin, I mean, how do you take that? I know he's gone a bit on the, let's say, defensive in the media. I think his comment was somewhere along the lines of, hey, I mean, it's not exactly that bad a day. It's my first time off the podium this year, which I think is absolutely right. But I do think there's a lot of merit to what he's saying to me, which is, all weekend he looked a bit ragged. I mean, that was it qualifying or wherever he had the two crashes. I mean, that's quite uncharacteristic, and those are some big accidents too.
It's very difficult to bring yourself back. He has a personality that's you know, he's quite prepared to fight, and he's quite prepared to, you know, he's quite an aggressive rider. And I think that bringing yourself back from that to try and calm yourself, you saw all the team around him trying to calm him, trying to just get him to, you know, trying to hypnotize him back into being the, you know, slightly more of a calm weapon than he is. But I think he's just gone over the threshold. I can't make a real world analogy. I can't think of a real world thing, but it's like you've got yourself into this frustrated
fight mode that you can't get out of. And with the amount of adrenaline and the amount of importance, you know, he's leading the world championship at the end of the day. This means everything to these people. There's no way out of it. You know, it's all consuming in your head when you're going for something like a world title or just a race win. It takes over. And to try and bring yourself back from the edge, it's almost like you're so full of adrenaline. It is like a drug. And it's very difficult to bring yourself back, particularly perhaps when you've got a personality like Jorge Martin. I think that when we get to the next round, I think it will be, he will have analysed everything. The great thing about this as well is that, you know, everyone will have gone back into the trucks. You know, it's funny, I was reading a piece of one of our favourite journalists who's always moaning about something or the other. But in particular, he was moaning about the delay in the press meetings that you guys all have at the end of the day, because riders want to be on a 3:30 flight. They want to be out of there straight away. And what he's missing, I know that every journalist on site has paid his own way pretty much, and particularly in this guy's case, you know, he is an independent. So at the end of the day, he's paying for everything. He needs to get those conversations with riders. He needs to download all that information. He needs to get that copy out there. But at the same time, the other side of that is that, you know, the riders are keen to get, they want to get to the point where they can analyze what's happened to them. They want to get on that airplane. They want to get to the other end of things. They want to work through what's just happened. They're not in speak to journo mode all of the time. I know it's part of their duty, and yes, they should be able to do it, but the teams are in between a rock and a hard place, trying to make their rider stay on site for an extra hour rather than catch his flight to go and work out what they're going to do next. You know, if you've had a really, really tough day, you want to be on a flight, and there's no place like an aeroplane, long haul particularly, for just sitting there in your own zone, shut off your first class or your business class seat.
Yeah, I was going to say, in business, yeah.
Yeah. Shut the door, and just download all that. And believe me, you want to get to that. You're in such a hurry to be able to sit in a corner and work it out and kind of lick your wounds mentally, to be ready for when you hold the conversation with your crew chief and when somewhere else will be downloading data, they'll be working their way through that. The rider will be thinking about every lap, every corner, every braking point, every maneuver. And to sometimes have that train of thought disturbed by somebody asking you, you know, how was it for you? I'm not trying to defend a rider for not doing his duty regarding the press, because I think that our media is particularly good, and and I don't think anybody realizes just how hard motorcycle media work. You can perhaps elaborate on it, Matt, because you're with them so much. But a lot of these guys are independent. They all turn up. They all pay their own fees for getting to and from racetracks. They all pay, you know, Matt Oxley, David Emmett, Simon Patterson. Sorry, I had to mention his name. These guys are all paying their own way. There's a whole group of them out there. So if they are overlooked or if they are snubbed by a team or by a rider particularly, it has a material effect on what they're doing for their job as well. Is that a ramble or does that make any sense, Matt?
No, I would have said that just comes back to what we were saying about Liberty Media. What's that going to do in the future? How are different things going to look? You know, are the riders going to get that choice or not? You know, who knows? I mean, there's a ways in which Formula One riders, drivers, do things. I've talked for a long time about MotoGP riders having very fortunate on the Thursday when they come in on, they get to rock up at about 11:30. They go to lunch first and then they do the media duties. Okay, on some races, they have a morning of sponsor things or like fan visits or a pre-event. Other than that, if they've got a quiet day, they rock up at 11, 12, have lunch. An F1 driver's in at 9. They are paid about 50 million, you know, a year, as opposed to 12, 13, like Fabio's reportedly getting. But they're worked a lot harder. And let's see how that goes when Liberty Rock of Anna say, this is more story-focused rather than results-focused, guys. That's where it's going to be.
Well, what I did then is send out some Liberty blokes on the back of a motorbike doing 200 miles an hour, and we'll chuck them up the road and see how they recover from the stresses of doing their job.
Yeah.
Do you know what, Keith, your chat reminded me of is back in the day, not towards the end of his career, but when he was, you know, still very competitive. you could always tell when Valentino had a bad day because he would take so long to come out to do his like media debrief and chat to the TVs. If he'd done well, you know, whether that be on a Friday, a Saturday or a Sunday, before we had like the TV set and things like that, he'd be out really quick to chat to everybody and then off to do his things. But if he'd had a bad day, you'd be sometimes hanging around the back of the box in between the two trucks for like half an hour, 40 minutes. And I remember he'd be getting on the radio going, guys, I'm still waiting. You have to cover everything else for me. But it's so true. They want to just block out. They've got no interest in anything else that's going on that day. They want to find out what on earth has happened and what they need to change for tomorrow.
It's a balancing act, and it's not an easy one, because I've always fall slightly towards the riders regarding this. Although having been involved in media for some considerable time afterwards, that I can understand both sides of it. And there doesn't seem to be an easy way out of it sometimes, because they must be committed to giving what the media need. But I think sometimes the understanding sometimes it needs to be an understanding of just how tough this job is and what you need to do it. On both sides, there needs to be a little bit of give and take on both sides. I mean, John Kaczynski is one of my favorite. He was the longest it ever took me to get an interview. Me, a cameraman and a sound guy, because we used to have sound guys back then too. I waited, I think, for 2.5 hours outside of his debrief. He was debriefing for Ducati at the time, and it was at Monza. And we waited outside of his truck for 2.5 hours to get this interview. And in the end, I was gritting my teeth, and I thought, no, I'm not going. It was getting dark. I thought, no, I'm going to stand here. If it takes till tomorrow morning, I'm going to get this bloody interview. So we stood there. The camera guy was, everybody wanted to go home for some food. And anyway, eventually, John Kaczynski came out, and he was definitely a bit awkward, and he came out, and he wanted to sit in this one position on the floor, which meant that I had to get on my knees, and the camera guy, in those days, the camera was about the size of a truck, so he's down on his knees with the camera on his shoulder like this, and it was a long interview because I wanted to get everything I wanted to get, but the most notable part of it was John Kaczynski's feet stank. I don't remember a thing he said. All I remember is the stink coming from his feet.
Okay. Were your questions like 5 seconds long? So what do you think about that?
He didn't want to take a deep breath.
Yeah. No, I've got to say, I do. I fully understand. And I was talking to one press officer a few rounds ago, trying to. Because I work a lot with some of the younger riders, especially in rookies, and try and help them with the media side, social media tips, and like how to conduct yourself in interviews. And so I was asking them what's the main problems that they face with the riders, especially there too, very, very good on camera, but let's say unwilling to go the extra mile with the media side. And they said, well, the justification the rider gives to me about not doing as little as possible is they say, okay, you want me to do this social media video or this interview with this journalist that takes like an hour. What if in that extra hour working with my crew, I could have found a setting for Sunday's race that meant I could win? Surely the press you get from that is going to be way better than this one-off interview. And but for as long as he says that, they can't argue that much. But that's just going to be something which teams and everyone's going to figure out, because they obviously the whole thing, it's a balancing act, isn't it? As everyone likes to say.
Let's talk about, the fact is that now that we've got Trackhouse in there, again, with the NASCAR connection, I mean, the NASCAR constitution is completely different. You know, whether you're Jimmy Johnson or whoever you are, you have to do a certain amount. It's in their constitution. You have to do a certain amount of press stuff. That is it. It's in your contract full time. I don't know what the contracts look like or with Dorna and through Herta. Obviously, the contracts are with Herta. Although Herta's contracted to Dorna to manage the teams and then the riders. I wonder what that has to say about the media side. Because I think there are room for quite large improvements on the media side. I believe that. But it's finding, as you just said, that balance. It's a wonderful word that never seems to balance too well. Okay. It's always tipping one way or the other. It does create and a little bit of aggravation. And I can understand that for the reasons I've said, you know, like, and you've just underlined it by saying, you know, if spending 2 hours in the corner of the garage working through data trying to get it sorted, who wants to clear off and do an hour? I don't know what you're like, Matt. I can only think in a straight line. I still have a rider's bloody mentality that can only think about one thing at a time. I can only go down that, and I'm convinced that motorcycle racers, sportsmen in general, are still the same, that they're focused on it. I know that, you know, media studies and all the other bits and pieces you can do to try and make it work out, but when you're actually a sports person that's focused on that tiniest thing, thousands of a second, what can give us that? It's really difficult to then break away. Okay, let me put it this way. When you're writing something, if you're a journalist and you're writing something, you typed it out, and some devil comes and talks over your shoulder and says, oh, you're coming out for a beer tonight and all the rest of it, and breaks your train of thought. And then you have to go back into that thought process of that story that you're writing. And it can be broken up. It can be disturbed by someone disturbing you in the press room, in the media room. Think of that only a hundredfold, which is what it's like at 230 miles an hour. You know, you're trying to work out in your mind every little tiny detail off the screen, off of what the crew chiefs are saying, what the technicians are all reporting, and then you've got to go off and answer some stupid questions somewhere. It's very difficult. There's a balance. We need a balance, Matt.
Well, it's a weekend off, and then we head to Jerez, which traditionally marks the start of the European season. Obviously, it's been a bit different this year. But going into this leg of the championship, always used to have like a slightly different feel about it. You kind of would always reference the fact that this is where we're going to really start to see, you know, who's got it this year and who hasn't, who's still got work to do. We go in there with Jorge Martin leading the championship. Just a couple of people I was going to pick out that we didn't cover what happened to them in the race. You guys might agree or not. I feel like Marco Bezzecchi has been equally a little bit quiet for the start of this season. Perhaps we haven't seen his true hand so far. And I think felt like Brad Binder had quite a quiet race on Sunday.
I was just going to say with Brad, I read on, did you guys read as well? He's either got a break somewhere, broken bone in his foot or hand or something like that from motocross. He let slip in a media debrief on Friday or Saturday or something like that, which, you know, considering how physical Cota is, that might go a long way to explain his duff weekend.
Story of the week, really, motocross, isn't it? Andrea Dovizioso injured. Bloody, you know, we got Petrucci, World Superbikes, I know nowadays, but Danilo Petrucci really badly injured, you know, broken jaw and God knows what. But and now you mention that, I hadn't seen that about Brad Binder, and I wondered why, you know, Jack Miller was back on it. I wondered why Binder wasn't there or thereabouts, but quite often these guys are carrying injuries that they don't kind of admit to. You know, they keep it kind of quiet as well, don't they? Particularly motocross ones. The motocross training is a major part of it. Do you remember Danny Pedrosa used to say, because Danny was always a little bit fragile, if he could break something, he would do. He used to do motocross training, but without the jumps, which I think really is really flat track. But anyway, it kind of, he wouldn't do jumps because they are the ones that give you the most injuries. Just ask Danilo.
Motocross training used to be a little bit taboo with the factories, with the manufacturers. I feel like, I don't know if this is 100%
true. Even back in my day, Amy.
Yeah.
Even back in my day. That's usually because we never gave them the bikes back, but anyway.
Cal Crutchlow's comment on Andrea Dovizioso's Instagram post made me chuckle when he said, I thought you were meant to be retired. Miller, he looks like he's having his meals through a straw as well.
Yeah, it looks like he's having a horrible time. He's got like two teeth out as well and stuff as well. And Dobby, I mean, he's taken retirement as a signal to try and be a professional motocrosser, hasn't he? That's the irony of his situation, is he retired from MotoGP doing more than ever. I think it was Battistella, his manager, who had to tell him at some point, I think you were there, Amy, like when we were chatting in the airport one time. And he said to him almost like, "You look, mate, you're not going to make it to MXGP. I'm sorry. Like, it's that ship sailed." And he was sort of having to put up with that. But yeah, I'm just trying to look through back on Twitter to see where I could find it about Brad, because I'm sure someone did say it somewhere that he let it slip and things. I'll credit him as well. It was Patterson said he casually let it slip. He broke a bone in his foot riding MX a few weeks back.
Right. Well, that answers a few questions on the Brad Binder front. I'm sure we'll find out a bit more about Bez in the upcoming races. Keith, what do you think we're going to see essentially going into Jerez? Obviously, we've got a couple of podcasts before that anyway, but just like rounding off circuit of the Americas, what we've seen in those first few races, it's really quite a tantalizing situation at the moment because there's actually an extra couple of names that I wasn't expecting. Like Maverick Viñales, can we literally put him in as someone that's going to be a little bit more of a repeat performer?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, he's pretty much done pretty well in the last couple of Grand Prix, hasn't he, at the end of the day? So I don't see any reason why he's not there. But I mean, could we have four more different tracks in the first four rounds when you think about it? Qatar, Portugal, Cota, and then we go to Jerez. I mean, fantastic. Yeah. I mean, it's just, people often ask me, what track would you go to? And I have to scratch my head all the time just because we are spoiled with racetracks in MotoGP of how good each and every one of them is. But Jerez is old school. I mean, going down to Andalusia anyway, I always like going down that far south. You can fly into Malaga and drive. You can go down to Gibraltar and go across the border into Spain. You can, you know, there's loads of way of accessing it, which is always great fun as well. The drive there is beautiful. The weather is always, you know, wonderful. The racetrack is just the best. I love Jerez anyway. It's a bit old school. I wish I was going. I'm sitting here. I'm jealous of not going to every Grand Prix still. I mean, if I wasn't married and had, you know, so many children, I'm sure I would spend my life just driving around or riding around, going to racetracks still. It is a great racetrack. And people say, which one would you go to? Well, I would go to Jerez. Jerez is another bucket list one for me. Those final three right-handers coming around before you get to the hairpin there are just spectacular. Moto3's flat out. Moto2's damn near flat out. MotoGP, you know, deep breath, grit your teeth, and make it through them if you can. It's just a wonderful racetrack. And we are going to have, again, someone else is going to come good. You mentioned already Bezzecchi. Yeah, there will be, you know, someone else that will pop up and do something brilliantly when we get to that. So I'm smiling away because one of my daughters has just stuck her head around the corner of the door.
Try to bend
one of the many. I'm glad she's awake.
I would Matt, have you got rookies in her, eh?
Yeah, exactly. I actually just got back from Jerez like 2 days ago. I was there for the Rookies Cup test and we were there with KTM and Honda and Aprilia all testing as well as Moto2. The Gresini team was testing with Matteo Ferrari, their Moto Week attendant. I think he's a Pirelli tyre tester as well and stuff for them, so he was on track with them, and it's shaping up really nice. So they already 2 weeks in advance building like the VIP village and stuff like this, and there was paintwork going around and everything, so it was pretty excited. Rookies will be there, their first race of 2024. That'll be incredibly exciting. It's one of the only free to watch championships that there are, by the way, everybody. Red Bull TV, so it's completely free, unlike Video Pass, a bit of a plug. If you could put over seeing my mug on it, it'll be really, really exciting. I must say, if there's ever a place I think we'll see Acosta get his first win, I'd like to see it, and I think it would be Jerez. He loves it there. The only reason why he didn't win in Moto2 there last year is because Sam Lowe's had one of those like mystical, magical in the zone rides where he just felt like he was floating, almost like an out of body experience. Other than that, Pedro loves that. He loves we can see, we all know it, he loves performing in front of people. He's a real showman, so I imagine that pressure there, he will only absorb it and use it to go faster. So he'll be my tip for Jerez for sure, I reckon.
Great to have you on, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure chatting with you as always. And guys, do get in touch with us. You can follow us on socials at @OMGMotoGP or send us your thoughts, comments, questions, opinions to omgmotogp@gmail.com. You can also send us a little cheeky voice note, but we'll be back, of course, next week with more OMG MotoGP. Thanks very much for listening.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.